It's Financial Planning with J. Daniel Plouffe, Episode 5, brought to you by WRBO Public Media. Here's Daniel.
With us today is an old friend of mine, Richard Spence, from the Syracuse office of Morgan Stanley. He's a senior vice president and a certified financial planner. So, Richard, you probably think you're smarter than me, right?
You bet.
I'm sure you do. It's funny, Richard, you and I were chatting literally in the office, and this topic sort of hit us both at the same time, this notion of investors looking to the stock market, the equity markets, as a source for potential income. So I thought that would be a good topic for you and I to bounce around a little bit today. And let me begin by stating the obvious. As you know, interest rates have been so low for the past few years that many income-oriented investors have really been challenged here. So as the markets have changed a bit recently, have you seen any change with investors? Is it better, worse, the same? What's happened lately?
Yes, investors are quite nervous. They face the unenviable choice of either taking little risk and receiving little income or stretching for yield and assuming more risk than their comfort level. Mm-hmm. And that's due to the Federal Reserve recently indicated that it was going to change its policies sometime in the future. And when that occurred, the investors experienced high price volatility and they lost principal on their bond funds, which in the past have been very steady for them. And if they were still holding their bonds, they're seeing unrealized loss on their statements. So while the last 30 years or so, the bond markets provided steady returns for investors, now the fixed income environment has become treacherous for those who are assuming additional risk to achieve higher income.
Sure. And I suspect, Richard, we'll be keeping track of the Federal Reserve for the rest of this year. But, you know, as you're looking around here, what are some of the sources for income for those seeking it?
Well, if the fixed income environment is undergoing long-term and permanent change, which is what we believe, the more conservative investor should shorten his or her maturities to lessen price volatility. Remember, fixed income prices move inversely to the direction of interest rates. So the general advice may be to accept a lower rate of return as a trade-off for protecting your principal, all other things being equal, Dan. One might, for example, invest in a CD or bond ladder or a shorter-term bond fund, or a shorter-term exchange-traded fund, then we advise people to consider, with a minority of their investments, seek a higher yield in funds that invest in bank loans, floating-rate loans, emerging bonds, shorter-term high-yield bonds, and place part of the money, though, in dividend-paying stocks.
And I'm glad you're saying that because we did a podcast a while back specific to the bond market, and you and I seem to be in agreement on most issues there. Now, in recent years, many investors have, in fact, as you're alluding, they've turned to the equity market, the stock market, as a source of income. A couple questions here, Richard. First of all, do you think this strategy is a prudent one? And secondly, clearly, there must be some added risks here. What are the risks associated with this approach?
The investor really should keep two things in mind. While fixed income prices are usually driven by economic growth and inflation, in normal times, stock prices are mainly affected by the growth of the company's earnings. And many companies also pay dividends, a portion of those earnings to their shareholders, sort of as a reward. Many investors recently may experience much success with dividend income strategies, and many have mistaken their returns as assured and stable, sort of a version of the bond market.
Correct, correct.
One mistake I see is blindly purchasing high-yielding stocks as a bond substitute. And that's not going to be so good if the company cannot sustain its dividend. Or, and you know this, Dan, if the dividend is so large as to dwarf the company's potential growth earnings and hence its stock price. But overall, I think it's a good strategy.
Well, you know, you must be looking at my notes here because on this issue of higher yields, specific to dividend yields, what exactly do you look for, Richard? And can we assume that high dividend yields carry higher risks? I mean, you're talking about that a second ago. And one more here. In this environment, what's a, quote, reasonable yield for this market?
I like a strategy of owning dividend-paying stocks in larger U.S.-based corporations that have the following characteristics: strong management, a worldwide reach, a history of rising earnings growth, and commensurately also rising dividends.
That's quite a hit list.
Yeah. One goal for the income investor, by the way, if you're measuring a stock dividend portfolio, is to try to find a portfolio whose yield is generally above market indices, and market indices presently are about 2%, mm-hmm. In the S&P 500. But not necessarily buying the highest yielding dividend stocks for the reasons that we talked about before. Investors should be wary of companies that cannot support their dividends as dividend cuts indicate corporate problems and stock prices react negatively to such news. The investor has to remember that dividend-paying stocks are not bonds or bond substitutes. The risks involve earnings, market volatility, another thing is interest rate environment, and then market risk associated with the general market movements. You know, you have to be aware that a good portion of every stock price movement has to do with the overall direction of the market. So unless you own a CD or individual bond and the company stays in business, you know that on maturity date, your principal will return to you. The stock market's not like that.
Sure. Well, how should investors evaluate dividend-paying stocks? What exactly are you looking for to sort of mitigate some of these risks?
Some of the things I look for, in general, look for reasonable valuations, financial strength, and not just the highest dividend payment. And chief among the traits of potential investments would be good management, the prospect of consistent earnings growth, and that's where the dividends come from
after all,
then consistent dividend growth. As a rule of thumb, the dividend again should be above the market yield, and if not needed, I encourage people to think about investing that dividend for compounding their earnings. One might want to sell, though, if the dividend appears in danger or if the company's prospects have changed, but unless that happens, be a long-term holder.
Thank you. Good point there. Now, what sectors, in your view, are better known for their higher dividend yields? Can you look at certain parts of the market?
This is not all-inclusive, but telecommunications, utilities, defensive stocks, sector investments such as real estate investment trusts or REITs are places where you might look for such yields.
I've known you for a few years, so I know part of the answer to this question. I know you're going to promote a more diversified portfolio for dividend-paying stocks, but if so, how does one structure that type of portfolio?
Well, first of all, you would want to make sure that you had many different companies in different industry areas. However, some investors, many investors actually, have neither the time nor the inclination for such an effort. And they should look to mutual funds, either indexed passive funds or actively managed funds, exchange-traded funds, or actively managed accounts to fulfill their income needs. Now, working with a financial advisor is certainly one thing that they should think about. It would shorten their learning curve and provide another set of eyes to advise and monitor their investment process.
I don't want to make this look any better than it is, Richard. There's all kinds of caveats and risks here. But, you know, there's another potential benefit, and that is many people may purchase dividend-paying stocks not just for the income potential, but also for the possibility of appreciation, which is to say the stock may go up, appreciation of principal. How about growth of income? These are not things that we normally talk about as it relates to the bond market. So does this approach provide a good hedge against inflation compared to bonds?
Yes. As you know, bond prices are affected by the direction of interest rates, and they move inversely to interest rates. And the concept here in the stock market is one of total return, or combination of price appreciation and dividend growth. As a shareholder of dividend-paying stocks, you're collecting cash or reinvesting the income into new shares. In other words, compounding. If we remember that historically a substantial part of the S&P 500 index return comes from dividends, so reinvesting stock dividends may compound at higher or lower prices and will provide a good way to increase your wealth. But as a shareholder, you're not only participating in the dividends, but also in the stock price appreciation as those earnings grow. Because what drives stock prices but earnings and inflation or interest rates? Earnings matter over the long run. It sounds silly because it's so obvious.
Well, I'm so glad you're saying that, because I'll tell you, I have another podcast on this notion of buy and hold, and one of the comments I make is just that, about dividends and earnings. So you're with me there as well. Now, finally, Richard, for those investors who want to consider this approach for whatever reason, let's end with this. What are some of the main risks that they need to be aware of?
Just as a patient investor might make money over the long run, the impatient investor is going to lose faith in the results of his or her homework and change investments often, and perhaps with poor timing, he or she might not receive the earnings, dividends, and appreciation afforded to those who have done their homework or work with someone who does it for them, such as a financial advisor. Time is the investor's greatest asset. This is not suggesting by any means that the investors invest and walk away, but he or she should maintain their investment style and discipline that has worked well for them through a variety of market conditions.
I like the discussion. I like this topic. I think we'll have to revisit it and maybe take a look at how stocks look compared to bonds as things might change later this year. But Richard, thank you very much for being here today. Richard Spence joining us in studio, a conversation on stocks for income potential. He's a senior vice president with the Syracuse office of Morgan Stanley and a certified financial planner. Richard, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Dan.
From the Syracuse office of Morgan Stanley, I'm Daniel Plouffe. Thanks for listening.
To learn more about financial planning with J. Daniel Plouffe, visit WRVO.org.